This podcast is brought to you by Aviation Safety Magazine, the monthly journal of risk management and accident prevention.
Hi, this is Mary Grady for AvWeb, and today I'm talking with Jack Pelton, the chairman of EAA, about the new medical rules that came out this week.
People have a lot of questions about what this really means and how it's all going to play out. And the first, let me say, congratulate you. I know you guys are like feeling this is a big win after many years of effort.
Yeah, it's, I mean, after 10 years of debating and finding ways and finally getting something done, we're very, very pleased. And we're also cognizant of it. You know, we went into the battle going with what would be the ultimate and most lenient solution called a driver's license medical. And probably a good thing that we started there, because if we started anywhere higher than that, who knows where this might have ended up. So, you know, we're also realistic, and we didn't get what we initially asked for, but we got something that we think is very, very helpful.
Yeah, and we'll make it easier for pilots. And so far, the main question that seems to be coming up is people are wondering how their doctors are going to react to this. I mean, has there been any kind of outreach to general practitioners out there? I mean, are they required to sign this form and certify people, or is it just a checklist? Those kind of questions.
Yeah, they, you know, we have an aeromedical committee that council that has a kind of a broad range of different MDs on that, representing everything from cardiologist specialists to general practitioners, and they were all part of helping to guide this. And then we also have a legal counsel. So the feedback we've gotten is, well, first of all, to answer the question, the form has to be signed, and they are certifying on that form when the doctor signs. And that was a very contentious battle with Senator Nelson and Senator Boxer, who the only way this would have gotten across the finish line was if that was part of it. And we worked very hard to try to eliminate that, and we worked very hard even in the rulemaking with the FAA to get it eliminated. And as long as those two are in Congress, there is no way that that line is going to get eliminated. Because they were not in favor of eliminating the medical to begin with. So they said, this way, it causes the doctor to have to be honest in their evaluation. I mean, you can't just do a pencil whip and, do a Walgreens drive-through physical kind of attempt. So they do have to certify. Depending on who you talk to in the medical profession, there's many doctors who I've interfaced with that said, hey, this is no problem at all. It's when you come in and have your normal physical with me, I am attesting at that time when I send you out of the office with either you got a problem, you need to go get it fixed, or you're good to go. But it's only good, I'm only liable and understand it at the time you're sitting in the chair in front of me. If we've all heard the stories. And, I've had a good friend that had his physical and exercised every day, and the day after physical on the treadmill, he dropped dead. Those kind of things you can't predict. So there's a group of a lot of MDs that say, yeah, I'm very, very fine with that. There's other MDs that don't understand it. So there's going to be an education process in what exactly am I certifying? Is it there's a little bit of that gray area. Is it about their blood pressure, eyesight, and physical shape, or is it about their ability to operate an airplane? And so we've got to work through that because it's the language itself is subject to interpretation. So we're going to do some outreach and education with MDs on that. I think, I've been very pragmatic about it. I think it's going to be no different, like many people you hear that shop their third-class medical and, find the AME that is a path of least resistance. There's some physicians that people go to for their physical that they'll find that'll do this, and others they won't.
What about your regular AME? Would they be eligible, or would they be able to just sign you off in the same way?
Yeah, they certainly would. And that's, that's the other option. My AME have talked about it, saying, there's a lot of ways there's a lot of ways that this implementation rolls out. One of them is you could actually go get your third class with your AME, and you know what the requirements are and the checklist you've got to go through, but you don't have to go back for another 4 years instead of every 2 years. It's a 4-year third class.
Okay. So you could just
that is a possibility. Or you could go to your AME and just say, guess what? The good news is you don't have to send the paperwork to the FAA. Run me through the ringer. I think the thing that people are getting hung up on and overthinking is the relationship with your doctor, whether it be an AME or personal physician. If you have an issue, he's not going to ignore it. I mean, he's going to, you know, tell you point blank, I'm not going to sign this because you need to go get your heart fixed or or your blood pressure's over the moon. And your AME, the only difference is in the past, he could fail you and send in a failure, which the FAA then has record that you got you were not issued a medical certificate. And so with this new path, you've got the opportunity to go work your issues out in a manner that doesn't revoke your medical.
Yeah, well, but I can see, I mean, my doctor, I'm sure has never been inside a GA airplane, and I can see him balking at saying, how do I know if you are qualified or capable of flying an airplane? I don't really know what's involved in that.
Some of the personal friends and physicians that I know have taken, I have a friend whose buddy is a physician. He's taken the approach your doctor has. My doctor in town that I get my personal physicians for said, he looked at the language, he says, I don't have a problem with this. I am not liable or attesting that you can fly or can't fly or capable of flying. I'm a medical profession that tells you what your state of your physical being was on the moment that I tested you. And he said, so there's no, in his mind, there's no repercussion.
So I guess my next question would be, so what happens next? Are we going to, did you kind of get what you wanted here, or is there more to come?
I think I'd be remiss in saying there's always more to come. We're going to have to, I think the collective association perspective is we really would like to work on the signature line over time and see if there's ways of improving it, softening it. That would probably be the next step. We actually tried to do something before this Congress ended, and we didn't have a path. There wasn't a way to attach it to anything to get that done. So we will be looking at that. And with the FAA, the question will be, and with Congress, it'll be let's take a year or so and find out what feedback we're getting. I mean, if there is something we haven't seen that does create a situation that a doctor won't sign it for whatever legal reasons, we'll get that feedback and we'll have data to go back to Congress and talk to them about it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. And how about the LSA, industry? Do you have a sense of how this is going to affect them?
That was asked a lot along the way. I think because the LSA industry is still limited today by weight category, the folks, it's a box that's already drawn pretty tightly, so I don't see it having any impact on it. I mean, and I don't know if you've seen it other ways. I'm trying to get feedback from people to see what's the debate on this? Because if I have selected to go down the path of being an LSA pilot, I already have a very unrestricted path to get there, which is I still got to get a student pilot's medical, but I'm restricted to a class of airplanes that's less than what this is allowing me to operate. I don't need a medical for that. It's a nice fit. I think what they want and where they would be impacted is if we can get the weight increase of an LSA up, which is, I know, another subject that you wanted to talk about.
Yeah. So what is the status on that?
We've had great kickoff meetings with the FAA to float the concept, of which they are very supportive. The devil's in the how do you get it done? Because you have a reg that points to a standard that's called the ASTM standard that's not in the normal FAR system. And then you have, the medical reg, which is in the FAA system. So they were great, great support, but then left scratching their head saying, this is going to be an interesting one to try to figure out how you do this, which documents change, what regs need to be done. Very, very interesting. But it's a high priority from us from an advocacy standpoint. My head of advocacy, it is on their goals for 2017. You did have a question around CFI, though, and I think that's a big piece of the good news story. story, that if you read the way the language is actually written, a CFI who is working for hire does not need to have a second-class medical. This applies to him, which is a interesting twist in it.
Yeah, I guess so. So can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, today, I mean, the way the reg is written, that if you are a CFI, you have to comply with all of the regulations relative to commercial operation because it's for hire, which means that you have to have a second-class medical. And in this language, they said that CFIs can, in fact, as long as they're teaching in a class and category of airplane that fits this new reg, can use this medical. They don't have to have a class two. So what, I mean, for me, what the response is, I think of all these, you know, wonderful tenured instructors out there that have been doing it forever, but may have had a special issuance or other issues, and the second class medical hassle is too expensive for them, and you know, they're kind of in the tail of their career, but this has allowed them to keep going and pass on that great knowledge.
Oh, that's great. Okay, and any other aspects to this, do you think, that we maybe didn't expect that are going to be happening?
No, it is exactly like the language that was in the congressional bill that was passed and signed by the president. I mean, the FAA basically did a cut and paste, so there was no twists or turns. I think that some of the visceral reaction that I'm hearing initially is, oh my gosh, now it's actually in a bureaucratic document and regulatory. I think everybody was thinking that medicals are just going away and there was, you know, we were free from the PAPER Act. So the issue here is the document, two pages of instruction, one page the doctor fills up and one page for the applicant. And people are just not handling that well. So we had to just get through it and get over it. It's just paperwork. But the good news is it doesn't get submitted to the FAA. People with special issuances have a much easier path now to keep, a much more affordable path to keep flying. And it opens up, you know, you're not constrained to the AME system, which is great, where a lot of towns and communities don't even have AMEs.
True, yeah, that can be a hassle just in itself. Okay, well, is there anything else you'd like to add about this before we wrap it up?
I'd like to tell everyone that in the terms of Aaron Rodgers, the Green Bay Packers' phenomenal quarterback, when things come their way that they don't understand, just relax. Let's relax, and we'll get through this, and actually there'll be some goodness to it. I view it as, for me personally, because I fly airplanes that are outside of this category, I still think at some point the four-year third-class medical is just a nice breath of relief. If I'm not going to fly performance airplane, I can just go to my AME, go through the process. He's cheap. He signs me off, and I don't have to see him until 4 years later.
Okay, well, thanks very much, Jack. I really appreciate your time today.
Sure, Mary. Take care.